is the Starship ProCon show for another day of broadcast insolence. I did a little bit later on. I'm going to talk a little bit about the news on Rush Limbaugh today that he is he's got what's being described as late stage cancer, lung cancer, and he will make an appearance in the top five talking about that because there is. He and I go a long way back. We don't necessarily do the same style of show. Certainly the content is different. I don't happen to agree with a lot of things he says. He doesn't agree with a lot of things I say. But I have known and respected him for 31 years and have and he's really a super decent human being. I know people who disagree on the politics of it. It's one of the things in life that I really, I think is essential, especially now, is that people sometimes put those lances down, should be in more cases putting those lances down and looking at the humanity of it. And I know people would accuse him or me or anybody else who's a talk show host of being overly dramatic about things. I'm sure Kim Fox, when she's on the program a little bit later, would probably say that about me. But the when you have moments like this, moments of mortality, humanity, I think should be the first, and dignity should be the first and second most applied standards. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. Also coming up, Brett Baer is going to be here this hour talking about what happened in Washington today, and now in Iowa. The attention turns to Iowa. All the impeachment arguments and everything, they're all over. The House, the Senate is going to come back on Wednesday and vote, undoubtedly to acquit the president, but very impassioned speeches. Very impassioned speech by Adam Schiff, the leader of the House Democrats, and those, you know, he was the leader of that, the prosecution, if you will, in the impeachment. And an impassioned argument about this being midnight in Washington, he called it, and you know, who will stand up to something that is wrong, and why won't people stand up to something that's wrong? So we'll play a little bit of that for you. And I think in most part, people, it's interesting to hear the response that a lot of senators have, which is, yeah. No, I mean, he probably did it, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't rise to an impeachable level. So that's really the question. That's the debate that people are having, but the debate seems to be a foregone conclusion. Brett Baer will discuss that with us. And also, now, all you know is that Bernie Sanders is just happy as hell to get out of D.C. so he can get back to Iowa. So because he's been spending days there not going to houses and churches and gyms and all the places that, that these candidates have to go. We were there 4 years ago. Anna and I were there covering this 4 years ago for this weekend and this weekend into the Monday of the caucus, and it's really quite a thing to witness what they do in Iowa. And it does bear some explanation, and Brett will help us with that coming up after 3:40 today, because it's not simple. It's not like you go and you go to a polling place and you vote, or you go to somebody's house and you vote. You literally go to somebody's house and you stand in a corner. And then the number of people who stand in a corner or a high school gym or wherever these caucuses are being held, you got a number of people to stand in the corner that's going to be a Pete Buttigieg corner or a Elizabeth Warren corner or Joe Biden corner, whatever it's going to happen to be, Bernie Sanders corner. Then then they start winnowing it down. The people with the least people in their corner, they have to decide what the next corner they want to go to. Where do you want to go next? Which team do you want to go to? It's like picking a pickup basketball game in high school is what it's like. I was always the last picked, so I understand fully and completely what this must feel like if you're an Andrew Yang guy in Iowa today. So we'll explain. So anyway, the long and short of it is Brett Baer will help us explain all that. Ben Bradley's going to join us here in just a few minutes. There is great hysteria back here in Illinois, too, because one of the more well-known and respected legislators down in Springfield just got pulled over for not like on the road, but I mean, you know, by the government looking at him. So this thing has got tentacles, this investigation into what's happening in Springfield. Totally now casting a very wide net. And the numbers are in. The final numbers are in for the month of January. What were pot sales like in Illinois? How much money went into the kitty in Illinois? And is it working for you? All of that is coming your way. And what I mean for you, you know what I mean. I mean, if you're in line every morning at the pot shop trying to figure out if you're going to make it in time before they run out of the non-medical supply, we'll find out if you like that better or your corner dealer. That's how, or the guy in the mailroom. We'll figure all of that out. So that all comes your way on the Rokan Show right here. But first, we head off to WGN-TV News with Ben Bradley after we check the traffic and the weather with our own Lauren Lapka.
It was no chance encounter. Alligator Rob reveals the secret tool he used to capture Chance the Snapper last summer in Humboldt Park. Tonight on WGN-TV News at 9.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting. He was in studio with us last week saying that this something like this was going to be coming on the TV. He was in town. It was all very mysterious. Ben Bradley probably knows things about this as he joins us from WGN-TV News.
I also saw him lurking about, as you would say, of any alligator hunter. And this is a fascinating story. I've been talking with Dina, her producer Catherine, and the photographer Steve Scher, who went down to Florida. And this isn't just a retelling of the Humboldt Park Gators story. This is a fascinating look at how these gators are caught. I mean, this guy, he speaks alligator. He can communicate with an alligator. And then how his conservation work is being used in science and the space program and all sorts of other things that you would never think about. But, you know,
an he's alligator, an amazing
dude. I mean, this is like a prehistoric creature that has survived all of man's awfulness. If we should turn to any creature for hope about how to survive, it's the alligator, and the guy who fished the one out of the Humboldt Park Lagoon has some of the answers.
Well, this works out because my grandmother had alligator skin. So I kind of assumed that, you know, she was part alligator. We always thought that about her. A lot of time in the sun.
Yeah.
You know, he was here, like I said, last week or the week before, and we were talking to him about this issue, about how, you know, what was the secret weapon that he used, and he said it will get revealed on this thing coming up on TV, so that'll be for tonight, right? So he wouldn't...
Tonight and tomorrow night. It's a two-parter on the WGN News at 9, and it's fascinating.
He would not get into the detail of it, but I remember when he was here in the summer, during the Humboldt Park thing, there was Alligator Bob, right, before there was Alligator Rob, and there was this talk that they have to make a noise.
Yes.
That lures them out.
Mm-hmm.
And Alligator Bob, who was sitting there on his folding chairs,
with like a chicken chair, on a string.
Yeah, and a folding chair
in a canoe.
And his Panama hat. That didn't seem to really, you know, hey, alligator, get it, get it, get it, get it. You know, that didn't seem to be working.
No. It's more guttural, I think.
Yes, right. And actually, when he was here, when Alligator Rob was here, the successful one, he made the noise, actually, in the summer when he came up here and he explained it. And it lets them know that there's others around and they want to go be around others, but not like in a pod necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you see in Florida, if you see them in a pond or, you know, wherever you happen to, the golf courses, with a lot of places, parks, where they are, they tend to sometimes just lie on each other. You know, I don't know what's going on there. I don't necessarily want to when mommy and daddy alligator get love each other very much, but
and then 9 months later you have a beautiful pair of shoes.
You know, it was really, you know, the Lincoln Park Zoo has done such an amazing job in the last 3 decades of upgrading what it does there. Because when I went there as a kid and I took my daughter there as a kid, when she was a kid, I was a kid too. Like the reptile house in the basement, they had alligators and crocodiles, and they were just like in a pile, all piled up in what
it
looked
was,
like
it was sad, yeah,
like a Russian bath situation.
Right. It was just like a tiled room, a Russian bathhouse.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was totally. And you're looking at them, and they're like, I don't know. It was almost like
one minute I'm in the sun in the Amazon. Next thing I know, I'm in the basement on the north side of Chicago.
I mean, it's like Guantanamo for alligators, right? And then they finally figured it out. And they made it, you know, much more loving situation. But it just didn't seem. I don't think an alligator really thinks too much about it. But you know, it's still.
But I have to issue an apology and a correction because I may have previously said on this exact program that Frank Robb, the alligator hunter, like this alligator story had jumped the shark, right? Like, come on. Of course, we got a guy from Florida. He caught it. Done. I'm done with the story. Your 15 minutes is over. I am wrong. This is a fascinating story you'll want to see tonight at 10.
Yeah. This guy is interesting. You know, he...
And it's about so much more than him.
I know, but he keeps coming around. There's a lot going on with this guy. And it was interesting that he ended up doing this, that he came up here. The first time he'd ever been this far north. He doesn't own a winter coat. As a matter of fact, he bought a winter coat last time he was here. Then he forgot to have it when he was here last week. I mean, he's like, he's totally a creature, if you will, of Florida. And the on the Atlantic side and the Gulf side. And he's like a guy that doesn't really seem to be somebody who's seeking the spotlight. The spotlight found him.
He loves gators. When he was in our newsroom a week or so ago, he had a skinny alligator tie on. And, he's just this nice, unassuming guy who you would worry, as a tourist in Chicago, he'd accidentally, wander down to Lower Wacker Drive and something bad would happen.
Right.
He'll be fine.
Speaking of that, Kim Fox is going to be on the show later on today.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I know, right? Isn't that the right reaction?
Did you book this under an assumed name?
We were having all the candidates on. We asked her office if she wanted to come on, and we didn't hear from them for a long time, and then she agreed. And we were told on Friday that she was going to be here today at 6 o'clock.
Good for her. I'm proud of her for stepping into the...
the alligator den?
The alligator den, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to be fair.
And I hope you've taken your blood pressure medication.
You know what? It's really funny. Oh, my God, that's funny. I don't know that I did today.
Maybe Lauren and Kevin can kind of hold your hand.
Oh, my God. That's probably true.
I'm making popcorn for this. I'm just posting up and watching this thing go down.
It'll be like, it's sports time. Kevin's like, no, take my time. Go ahead. No, keep going.
I am going to be my charming, normal,
you are a fair
welcoming,
interviewer. I am a fair interviewer.
I am a fair interviewer, except when you're concerned. That's the only thing.
Someone just in the hallway here said to me, I can't wait for this Kim Fox interview. Everyone's on the edge of their seat for this.
It's going to be interesting.
And I want to be there when she looks at her schedule, when she got up this morning, looked at her schedule, and she's like, okay, speaking at this church, and then I'm going to this community. And what? Who booked this interview with Rokan?
I called Jeff, our producer, on the way in today, and I said, we talked in the morning, and then on my way in a couple of hours ago, I said to him, did you cancel yet? And no, this is great. No. I mean, listen, if she has, I got to respect.
Great tradition spending an in-depth, fair amount of time with politicians and hearing what they say, which is becoming more and more rare in the media landscape.
Right. I mean, it's just easy to jump on this, but I have some questions about what's going on. And I was just saying, I pay a lot of property taxes, a lot of property taxes. I live in a nice neighborhood in Chicago, downtown, just a little north of downtown. And just this weekend, there was a stabbing. There was that major snatch and grab that you guys had on your news on Friday.
The Gucci store, which also hits very close to home for you.
Yes, it does. Right, I'm like, oh God, don't take the loafers.
This is why my loafers cost so much.
Oh my God, because the smash 10 and a half. Leave the 10 and a half.
The struggle is real.
But
Kim Fox, do you understand what I've had to go through since the Gucci store got hit?
Well, listen. The video that you guys had was so compelling. Of these, your camera crew was there on Friday.
Kelly Davis was there. She was reporting on another story. Saw it. Jumped out of the truck with her iPhone.
Right.
And started to chase after the guys. And then you can almost see her give that a second thought as they jumped into their vehicle.
Well, and they looked to be young men, right? Yep. I mean, they were teenagers.
She thought they looked to be teenagers.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And so, they're running past her with incredible speed, and they get into a car, and the car door is open, and it's driving away. And they didn't catch those guys, did they?
Not yet.
And that vehicle matches the description of a bunch of other robberies and robberies, I should say, that have happened just two blocks to the east of there. So this is the point of this is that carjacking, stabbing, and that all happened in successive days, within a couple blocks of where I live. Now, people go, well, this happens all the time in bad neighborhoods, so screw you. There's people being shot all the time. It's bad everywhere is my point.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. And a lot of the... And it's different. I'm a lifelong Chicagoan. I've lived in good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods throughout my existence here. And the streets feel as dangerous as they felt in the 1980s, and they were pretty dangerous in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
So, just saying.
Yep. Murders and shootings up in January in Chicago this year after making some progress in recent years.
All right. Let's talk about the other thing that's happening downstate in Springfield. There's a you have a piece tonight on
yeah,
Mike Madigan
up at 4:30. So in a what we in the biz call a Friday night news dump. House Speaker Mike Madigan's office sent out at 7:49 p.m. on Friday of Super Bowl weekend news that a former state rep, who is, we believe, currently the McHenry County Board President, had been accused of sexual harassment by a state employee. Madigan's office got that complaint in November of 2018. The speaker said that his office opened an investigation, and in February of 2019, so, what, 3 months later, they determined the allegation was credible. Then a month later, they got more evidence that suggested there may have been criminal conduct on the part of this former state representative. So that was March 2019. The speaker determined that there may have been criminal conduct and referred it to law enforcement. Nothing happened until last week, when state police executed a search warrant at Madigan's office to take documents about this investigation, and then the speaker's office put out the press release. So, obviously, Madigan has been under fire for his handling of sexual misconduct claims. He lost his chief of staff to this, and it's just interesting how this was handled. We're going to look at the time that went by, the fact that reportedly, the target of this investigation is former state representative Jack Franks, who's now the McHenry County Board Chairman,
and considered to be a competent guy.
Very
in
much
Springfield.
So.
I mean, he was a respected guy
on budget issues and on other issues. He was certainly, you know, not a Madigan crony in the truest senses of the
right.
word, but he was a Democrat, and he's up for re-election. And so you have to wonder, while Madigan over the last couple of months now says that his office instructed Capitol Police not to let him in to the state Capitol complex, and if he did, he had to have a police escort. But you don't tell voters about that, and you don't tell voters that there's an allegation that your own office deemed credible. And so now, of course, we're past the point when the Democrats can run another candidate, and Mr. Franks is on the ballot. I reached out to him. He declined to comment. In McHenry County, yeah. He's up for re-election as county board chairman there. And it's interesting because when he became county board chairman, you know, that was traditionally a Republican county. And so, you know, there is concern about losing that seat among Democrats. I'm not saying that that interfered, but certainly at a time when Madigan claimed to have learned a lot of lessons from how you handle sexual harassment, there are still a lot of questions about this.
So what you're saying is too late for Democrats to run somebody else in the primary, which is now...
Right, but there is a Republican candidate.
Right, that's about
the primary is in March.
Right, month and a half away.
Yep.
6 weeks away. So that's going to be... An argument can be made, Ben Bradley, that maybe that this wasn't fairly adjudicated. All right. We'll see you on the WGN TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ben Bradley. Let's check in now in the WGN Radio Newsroom, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. Rokon Show right here, 720 WGN. All right. Our friend Brett Baer joins us from the Fox News Channel Special Report. You can see him at 5 o'clock Chicago time. But we always prefer that you DVR him because I think he looks better in he's like a fine wine.
The playback's so much better that way.
I think so. You know, you let it open and decant a little bit, and then you have a couple sips, and it's all really good. All right. Brett, a couple of things before we get started. Let me just make this announcement. We have just been told that the Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, who was scheduled to be on this program at 6 o'clock tonight, Chicago time, has asked to be rescheduled. Everybody was looking forward to that in this building. I have had a long history of 4-year history of disagreeing with a lot of the things that she has done, and now she agreed to do an interview. Now she has agreed not to do an interview, so today at least. So more details on that coming up. Okay, Brett. I'm sure you've had that happen in your career where, you know, kind of...
Many times.
Yes, and then they go, uh-oh, well, who booked this? All right.
Yeah, who booked this?
All right. Now, let's just start very quickly. The impeachment, all of the discussion and all of the procedural and parliamentary things that were part of the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump in the United States Senate here in 2020 are over. All's left now is the vote on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be speechifying until that point. Senators getting up for 10 minutes at a time saying why they're voting one way or another. But the vote is not in question, and everything, pretty much the drama, is out after that witness vote, whether to allow witnesses or not. So really the drama now is to see if there will be Democrats like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and Doug Jones who vote to convict, who vote to acquit, right, and thereby making it bipartisan. I think the other talk of the town is that this won't end anything and that investigations will continue and the possibility of another impeachment still looms, as hard as that believes.
Yeah. Also, there's some question on the other side, too, on the other side of the aisle, whether Mitt Romney or Susan Collins will vote to acquit or they'll vote to convict. So there's that question still that sits out there, which, you know, it'd be interesting to see it all flip that way. And go, yes, well, it was a completely bipartisan thing if you were able to see that happen. All right. Well, more on that on Wednesday. Right now, in one of the wildest, weirdest things, you and I were together 4 years ago in Des Moines for this, the Iowa caucuses. We were running around that during the day to all the different speechifying that all these candidates are making in downtown Des Moines or whatever markets that they're going into in Iowa. And then the caucus goers go to a church basement, a school gym, somebody's house, and they stand in corners for their candidates, or they raise their hands for their candidates. This is so unlike what people who live in ballot states go through, right? We show up and we take the placemat thing and we put it in a machine and we hit a button and then we hand it in. These people actually have to go stand there and they get lobbied to move from one candidate to the other, right?
That's exactly right. So this time will be a little different in that your candidate has to initially get enough people in the room to qualify to be what's called viable. So 15% of the room, let's say you have 100 people, 15 of them have to be in your corner in order for you to be in the game for the second go round. I mean, it's like a giant game of musical chairs. And so then all the 15% people, candidates, then they do one more check. Does anybody want to switch? And then they're working in the room, they're lobbying each other. And then they do a final alignment, it's called. And that count then determines the delegates that candidate gets from those precincts. I mean, it is kind of arcane and it's a little bit tough to explain, but they take it really seriously here in Iowa. And, you know, they've seen every candidate about five times, sometimes in their living room.
And there's something to be said for this, though, which is that this really does require politicians to have that human touch. They have to be in the living rooms. You know, there's a certain percentage of Iowans that each one of these candidates will touch. Remember, and you'll recall, 4 years ago, it was Republicans doing this. Republicans had a cattle call of candidates, and Donald Trump did not win Iowa, right?
Remember?
Ted Cruz won Iowa, and as a matter of fact, Donald Trump talked about selling land off in Iowa that he was thinking about buying because he was mad at Iowa that night. And so,
but you got to work it. Exactly right. You got to work it, and it takes organization. That's why tonight, I mean, look for Bernie Sanders, who has a really strong organization here. Elizabeth Warren probably can do pretty well. I went to a Sanders event, a Warren event, a Buttigieg event, and a Biden event. And of those, the Sanders event was the most fired up. And don't be surprised if Sanders, you know, starts winning a few of these. I mean, you look at this, you look at New Hampshire, where he's well positioned, right, according to the polls. There's a new poll out in South Carolina that he's back by two. Biden's only up by two in South Carolina, mm-hmm, and that Sanders winning Nevada. I mean, at some point, the Democratic Party is going to, heads are going to explode in the party establishment.
Yes, I think you're right about that. They already are. And when you watch the where the stuff is moving, it's strange. I mean, I start to wonder at moments like this, with Joe Biden being, you know, such a household name. But he's not. He seems like the only thing that the Democrats connect with him on is that he's probably the best position to beat Donald Trump. But that's it. I mean, there's really no other value.
Why his close is, you know me, and this is essentially a third term of the Obama administration. That's his close. I went to the speech and about character and about Donald Trump. It's all about running against the president, not about the rest of the field. We'll see if that works here. I think if Biden finishes well, if he finishes third or fourth, this is really going to be a problem for the Biden campaign.
Let me give you a real practical example. Again, 4 years ago on this day, on the Monday of the Monday before the caucuses happened on Monday night in Des Moines, you and I were at the Jeb Bush presentation. He would have been like the Biden-esque character of that, and he was a front runner. He was in that hotel little banquet room, and more press than actual supporters, zero passion, and we looked at each other like, this does not look good for him. And it wasn't. I mean, he was out relatively quickly.
And the more the establishment talks about Bernie Sanders and they say this happened, the more fire. It's like a giant shot, a B-12 shot in a Bernie supporter's, buttocks. Because they get fired up. The more Hillary Clinton talks about Bernie, they lost to Hillary by 0.2% last time. Wanted the vote total, and the Iowa Democrats didn't have it. So that's why they've created this new system where there's more transparency, in part because, the Bernie people think they got the shaft last time.
Yeah. All right, Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. Thank you, sir. We'll see you later. All right. There he is. Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. Special report tonight, 5 o'clock. Again, DVR it, watch it later. He'll be on all night on the Fox News Channel as they're reporting live from Iowa, as everybody is now. And including our own Ryan Burrow is there. We're going to talk to him next hour. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapka, traffic and the weather. All right. It is the Rokon Show right here on 720 WG. And I must say this before we move on to other things. Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, was scheduled to appear on this program. And we just 15 minutes ago received a phone call from one of the people in her office, in her campaign, actually, to be specific, who called and said something came up with the campaign. She's not going to be able to make it today. I'd like to say, anybody surprised by this?
Nope.
But I did call 2 hours ago and ask Jeff, our producer, on my way in. I'm like, did she cancel yet? Because they just assumed that this is not the kind of, she's not going to sit down for an interview where she's going to be asked tough questions right now at this point in her career, at this point in her campaign. Maybe a week out or 2 weeks out when it appears, when she's seeing polling numbers that are showing her soft and she's got to go out and make a splash or go out and make an explanation for what's going on here. But she walked right away from it because we've offered it. We've had every other candidate on so far who's running for Cook County State's Attorney, and she is not appearing here.
Was she scheduled to come in studio?
Yes.
I mean, I was texting my friends and family members. Now I had to
John Cass called about an hour ago, and he's like, called our producer, goes, did she cancel yet? It's the exact, everybody has the exact same question. And this is going to be one of those situations where she looked at her schedule and went, wait a second!
I was organizing a viewing party in our green room for everybody here at WGN. Popcorn ready, beverages lined up.
Oh my gosh! Let me just run through a couple of the questions I would have asked her, and maybe she can take some notes right now so she can prepare some answers. So, for example, I would ask why it is that when people who are charged with felonies, such as aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, they are 77% more likely this year to be released out of custody, either put on home confinement or given a bond. 77% more likely for, again, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. How about felon in possession of a weapon? Somebody who's got a weapon on him, doesn't have a license to have the weapon, and is a felon who would be barred from having said gun. What do you think the percentage increase of from last year to this year of them getting sprung onto the street is? 292%. 300%, essentially. I hate to sue me for 8 different percentage points. How about drug manufacturing and delivery? That goes the other way. More of those. Here's part of the whole, the crazy thing. That drug dealing, which is supposed to be the thing that they're letting people out for, because now drugs are, you know, half the drugs that these guys are in the pokey for are now legal. Now you can go to, you know, go to some dispensary and overpay for it and get a gummy bear and grandma wants them too. Those incarcerations are actually, which is crazy. I mean, it's like, it is just, that's down 50% in terms of holdovers. Okay.
Do they want to make a Smollett joke right now, but holding back?
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. That's where I am here. Hopefully she'll come join us and we can talk about it. We could maybe there's an explanation for all this that I clearly cannot understand.
Maybe you guys can meet at Subway and clear the air a little bit. Maybe get a couple tuna sandwiches.
Maybe we could. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. That's a particularly good idea. All right. Coming up, I need to calm myself. Coming up, a chance to win Blackhawks tickets. It's Monday, which means that we give Blackhawks tickets away thanks to our friends at Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and courtesy of them throughout the entire season. This game is going to be every Monday, you know, you're able to do this. This is going to be the New York Rangers coming to the United Center. One of the few appearances the only appearance the New York Rangers are going to make this year at the United Center, but more importantly, one of the only times in the month of February that the Hawks are going to be at the United Center. That's coming your way on February 19th. There is a game on Wednesday, which we're planning to attend and do our thing where we walk around the concourse.
Yeah, just three
in
games.
In slow motion. And then we have a guy with a fan who's in front of us. Not like a fan of the team. Like an actual fan that's blowing our hair back as we're walking around the concourse. Anyway, that's coming your way a little bit later on. If you want to go see it. It is so much fun to see the Hawks and the Rangers. And it's actually, that's one of the few games where you get a bifurcated audience. There's a lot of Rangers fans. There's a lot of New Yorkers who live in Chicago, and they overpay for the tickets. And they're all in the fancy seats. So if you're down the 100, like on the concourse, it's a bunch of people in Rangers jerseys. You get up into the 200 level and 300 level. No. I'm telling you, do not in the 300 level, do not wear a Rangers jersey. You hear me? You know what's going to happen up there. Generally around the third period. Now, the only difference is there's fisticuffs with carpeting on the floor as opposed to at the old Chicago Stadium where it was linoleum. It's easier to clean up at the old Chicago Stadium when there's a fight than it is now with the fancy carpeting at the United Center. All right. I tell you that. Okay, now also coming up next hour too. This is interesting. If you were watching the Super Bowl last night, you were watching these commercials that didn't seem to go together. Like all of a sudden there was like toilet paper and beer in the same commercial, and you're like, what's going on there? What is happening? Well, there's an explanation for that, and it's a really interesting one. So the creative and innovative editor at Adweek, David Greiner, is going to join us and tell us exactly what happened there. And Ryan Burrow is in Iowa for us. He'll be joining us in just in the 4 o'clock hour to talk about what he's seeing on the ground there as they are doing their caucuses tonight, which is just, I mean, that's the sausage being made that people always talk about in terms of the electoral world. It's bizarre, it's strange, and stay tuned. You're going to want to hear what goes on there. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, top 5-5, in which we share some of the sad broadcast news of the day here. All right, all that comes your way. But first, we've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.
Radio Chicago, this is AM 720. WGN.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on.
Yeah, it's your halftime show. You got your Shakira, you got your J-Lo, you got a lot of dancing, you got an immense amount of lip syncing last night. and you got the American and Puerto Rican flag in a in what apparently is like a multi-million dollar item, that shawl, blanket, whatever the hell that thing is, that J-Lo had a cape, I guess is the right term. All right, David Greiner, who is absolutely a legend in the advertising journalism world, is joining us right now from Adweek. And I want to talk a little bit about the business of last night, David, because this is a very different feel of Super Bowl ads than I can remember. Because what you were seeing is a bunch of different products ending up in the same ad. And I started to wonder about what's really going on there. What's the strategy there?
Yeah, we saw a few, and sometimes it made a lot of sense. Like, on paper, made a lot of sense. Like for P&G, a company that owns Procter & Gamble, they own a lot of different brands, and so they shoved a ton of them into one ad. I'd say they ended up with kind of a chaotic mess, and it's hard to even know what exactly they were advertising. And then other times it was a little more effective. I thought Mr. Peanut bringing along his friends, Mr. Clean and the Kool-Aid Man to his funeral was a little more effective as far as mascot funerals go.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And I attend mascot funerals. Unfortunately, all of our mascots, they're getting a little age on them, and I'm attending more of those funerals than I like. But it gets your attention, right? Isn't that the whole idea of this? I was wondering, and pardon me for getting the next level down in terms of thinking about this as a business principle, but when P&G decides it's going to do an all call and throw a bunch of its products in as opposed to specifying products or really pushing on one thing, you always wonder, because the canary in the coal mine in economic ups and downs in America is often the broadcast advertising world. We tend to see it before other people see it, because you've got businesses that are deciding that they're going to retrench a little bit. And I thought I took this as a move to efficiency by some of the big advertisers. Am I reading too much into that, do you think?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I don't know how much of an economic indicator or anything it might be, but it is definitely a sign of these companies are kind of looking at this huge portfolio they have of the 180 different products that are in your house, and they're thinking like, well, we could buy 20 different ads for, $100 million, or we could just buy one ad and shove 100 million products into it. And I don't think this year really proved that was a tremendously effective tactic. But in other ways, it's also honestly just a form of borrowed interest, which is kind of like the whole model of advertising is, if you don't have time to really tell someone a new story, you tell them an old story. And I think we saw that with movie references, with characters, and these other mascots jumping in. There's a lot of borrowed interest being thrown around.
Yeah. What did you think was the most effective thing last night, Dave Greiner, from Adweek?
I think the number one ad consistently seems to be Jeep and their callback to Groundhog Day, bringing Bill Murray out. This is his first ad, and he has said it will be his last ad, not because it was a bad experience, just because he was like, yeah, I did it once, and I'm done. So this was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing to get to see someone reprise a role like that. They did justice by the movie, which is one of my favorites, and I think many people's favorites. And just all around, it was a crowd-pleaser. The product, the Jeep, really made a perfect kind of appearance in the ad and put a new spin on the movie. Just about a perfect ad.
Yeah, that was really well done. Unfortunately, it doesn't have legs, right? I mean, isn't that one of the problems? That you're not going to be running that in the spring. You're not going to be running that in the summer. It feels to me like a one-and-done.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're putting out an extended version, they certainly got their money's worth out of PR today of all the people like myself who named it the number one ad of the Super Bowl. I would say if you can get, even a good ad, much less number one in the USA Today ad meter, number one from Adweek, really won pretty much almost all the major accolades across the board, you probably got your money's worth out of that. And it was made by a Chicago agency with HiDot, which also did the ad for it with Jason Momoa, kind of unnervingly becoming very skinny for
Rocket Mortgage. All right, I want to just I would like to explain what the hell happened in that commercial. Was Jason Momoa, who's obviously a really interesting large human being, right? I mean, he's great looking, he's got the hair, he's got the body, he's got the whole thing. And then when he is coming home and literally taking pieces of his body off, turns out that like his pecs are like, that's just like a thunder vest that he's wearing over his body, takes that off, takes his hair off, and he's got this sort of really bad male pattern baldness. It was such a great use of his image. And I think it also it helps him in the long run, too, because first of all, I'm sure there was a ton of money that they paid him for that. But it makes him human as opposed to the sort of superhero thing that he's doing. David, could you hold on one second for me? I want to come back and I want to talk more about this. David Grainer from Adweek is joining us right now. We're talking about the Super Bowl ads and the ones that won and that didn't. And what does this mean about the business right now, too? Like the business of all of these, with all of the combinations of ads you saw last night, did it make any sense? And also your thoughts, what you liked and you didn't like. 312-981-7200 is your telephone number. Right now we check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies?
Look who's got Smart Pack.
Smart Pack?
Just hit the clicker, car packs itself.
It's smart.
It's wicked smart. And I can pack it anywhere.
How about Dorchester?
Packed it.
Foxborough?
Packed it.
The Garden?
Packed it.
Saugus?
Packed it.
Swampscott?
Revere?
The Harbor?
Are you kidding me? I packed it and then unpacked it.
You unpacked it?
Kid.
Game changer.
One of the more entertaining commercials from last night. That's the Hyundai Sonata Smart Pack ad. David Grainer is with us. He is a legend in the journalism world of advertising at Adweek magazine with a really interesting title now. I like how this is all happening in our business, David. You're the creative and innovation editor at Adweek, because this is really, because that's really kind of where it goes now. It's all about innovation. And you do also do a podcast for Adweek as well, we should mention. All right, let's just talk a little bit about the economics of this. What were the spots going for last night?
I think some were a little more pointed than others. Obviously with Jeep, which we just talked about having kind of the hands down number one out of the game, they're trying to launch a new, Jeep Renegade. So they want you to go buy it. That's a pretty easy one. Sub like Quibi wanted you to know that they existed, that they are still kind of startups and trying to get attention. And then there's ones that are a little more vague, like you saw Alexa and Google trying to just kind of get you using their voice activated technologies, whatever those are, and kind of showing how they are all over your house or all over your life and playing a lot of different patterns. So it really came down to the brand, but I think that most of them just want you to know they exist.
Right. And I was a little confused by the Snickers ad, quite honestly. I'm not 110% sure why we had to drop a gigantic Snickers into a sinkhole and appease some sort of a god, but I'm not gonna lie to you, David. It took me out of the moment, right? I'm trying to watch a football game. I'm thinking about Patrick Mahomes. I'm thinking about the fact that the Bears don't have Patrick Mahomes. I had a lot in my mind. And the next thing you know, I'm paying homage to a god with a Snickers bar. I get it. It was very creative, but it lost me. How much were those ads? Was that up or down from last year?
I mean, it's always creeping up a little bit. It seems to be holding steady around $5.5 million for 30 seconds, which, $5.5 million here, $5.5 million there. Soon you're talking real money.
Right. Exactly. And people always talk about what that is. If you're a company coming in, buying a one-off, right? Like GoDaddy did early on, right? And they were a big sponsor of the Super Bowl for about a decade because they were buying these one-offs. They weren't, their television ad buy number was basically their whole budget, or most of their budget was being spent in one night. But now, if you're Snickers or your Mountain Dew or your Jeep, like you just mentioned, that had the number one ad with the Groundhog Day ad yesterday, then when you get to that, they get a little bit of a discount for buying the network anyway, right? I mean, Fox is going to give you a little bit of a discount if you're buying a whole set of schedules along the Fox network all the way throughout the year.
Yeah, I would hope that at the very least, if you're tied, then you're buying four ads over the course of the Super Bowl. I would hope they'd knock at least 10% off.
Right, exactly. You got to buy in bulk. It's like anything else, David. It basically is it. All right, can I just ask you a more general question before I let you go? All right, so that's all the Super Bowl ads. But are you seeing more in the industry as advertising obviously is changing, and there's so many different ways by which visual advertising and narrative film advertising is being distributed, right? It's not just network and cable television anymore. There's YouTube and there's a bunch of other ways of getting, you're just on your phone, just trying to get somewhere, right? You're going to have to watch an ad and skip on it after 3 seconds or whatever it happens to be. Do you think that is helping or stifling creativity? Where are you on the art of this as now you almost can't avoid them?
I think it's had a huge positive impact on creativity, honestly, over the last few years. You're seeing pre-roll ads where ads are just more interesting at the beginning, right? Because they want you to stick with it, and they're finding clever ways to do that. And I think you're also seeing ads that are 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long, sometimes 5 minutes long, and people are voluntarily watching them because they're really good content. And so I do actually think that because you're not as subjected to ads, you know, mandatorily anymore, that it's making advertisers have to be more creative. And they're producing some, honestly, some real great pieces of film sometimes and other pieces of, I'm not going to say art. I'll stop just short of that, but I'll say they make some really interesting content.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, there are some moments where you watch something and you're like, it is dramatically artful. Right. You know, Anheuser-Busch for years was good at that. I think the Jeep last night, as you point out, that is a great, I wouldn't say that's necessarily art, but it was very entertaining. And if you can get somebody to laugh and then think positively about your product all at the same time and be interested in it, taking that next step, because the one thing about television advertising that is different than advertising on the computer is that, you know, you have a click, you have an ability to catch them right there where they are. In television advertising, you have to inspire them to go make a move, to move from one place to another, or to pick up their phone and look something up, or whatever it happens to be. So it's a different part of the art form. And look, I just used the word art. Did you see what I just did there? I did the wrong
They're
thing.
They're getting to you.
I know they did. All right, David, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, as always.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
David Grainer from Adweek Magazine. All right, so last night, as we're talking about the halftime show, I was thinking to myself, in all of the different iterations of that halftime show, as it began, as it moved through, I was not, I have to say, I'm not going to lie to you. It felt to me like we had taken a step backward because it was so clearly lip synced. And it's great choreography, and J-Lo is 50. It makes me feel better to have a 5 in front of my number. You know, I feel younger as a result of her, but it's sort of like the 21st century version of Up With People. Like back in the 70s and 80s, when you watch the Super Bowl halftime show, first of all, they just had, in the beginning, they just had a halftime. It was like any other game.
They weren't wearing those costumes.
No, that's true.
They had bright colored t-shirts on, if I remember right.
Yes, or a sweater. They were like a bright colored sweater that was over like a polo shirt.
Lauren and Kevin have no idea what we're talking about.
Right. But that's, okay, so there was this Up With People, which was, I don't even know what the hell they were. It was an organization of young singers, and they went around the country and they found these people, and they would sing uplifting songs in the most white British way you could possibly imagine. It made Lawrence Welk seem like a porno.
It was kind of like clean Glee, like Glee before there was Glee.
Yes,
you know?
Right. Glee without any of the gender fluid issues.
Exactly.
Right? And these kids were, you know, fresh faced and basically right out of central casting. And then they would sing these really, uninteresting songs. Can you find an Up With People? It was horrifying. Or sometimes they would do like cleaned up versions of pop songs in a way that didn't need cleaning. You know, it was just that they wanted to make it less offensive to people. And that's what, and the NFL was like, yeah, the NFL's entire plan was to not offend. That was what they were trying to do back then. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's what you saw last night too. Like the pregame was very much, it seemed to me like it was a Colin Kaepernick apology tour last night as they were doing the pregame. Because you had the Medal of Honor recipients, right? And you had these stories of the connection between NFL and military charities and stuff like that, which is great. I am all for it. But it was almost like saying, hey, we are red, white, and blue and as American as you could possibly be. And whoever told you that we weren't is totally wrong. And that we got rid of that other guy. And we didn't even pick him up for the teams that really could have used him. Hell, the Bears could have used him and they didn't pick him up. It was bad. That's all I heard when I was watching the pregame show.
Virginia McCaskey was in that pregame lead-up where the kid came out with the football and she handed it to him. That was pretty cool.
Right. That was very cool.
100th anniversary thing.
Yeah.
That whole segment was really cool.
I just thought the halftime show felt kind of flat to me. Like, it just didn't feel big. I don't know. I think, like, it's very polarizing, this year's halftime show. Some people loved it. Some people wanted nothing to do with it.
It was very Vegas-y. You know, it wasn't, I didn't get that sense. Like, the one thing, we played the Prince one last Friday. It's the best one of all times because it was Prince. It was not lip syncing. He was playing his guitar. It was raining. He was potentially, you know, going to electrocute himself. But yet, he pulled it off. And Bono, same thing. And Paul McCartney, you know, you get that sense of, you know, of artists who are not just, it's not like a Vegas review. But I will say this, it is better than Up With People.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad.
Oh, God.
So did they do it multiple times, or was this a one-and-done halftime show?
I think
they did it several years.
Yes.
I remember they had, like, a theme song called Up With People, and they sang that every time.
Can you find that, Brian? Because that would be something, because yeah. I remember that now.
Yeah.
I'm so glad, Kim, that you recall this, because...
That we're the same age?
Yeah, because as a teenager, I was embarrassed. Right, it was like I'm watching this, and these are my contemporaries, and they're massacring, like, Hey Jude is one of your more specifically great songs of all time, right? No question about it. And to make it milk toasty, that just to take all the soul out of it, all the sort of the angst out of it.
See, but at that time when I was a kid, I just loved any, like, big number like that. You know, like, it was a Disney kind of thing, which I liked.
Yeah.
Oh, so Up With The People is, like, an organization?
Yeah.
Just a band?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, it was an organization, yes. And they sent out these childlike automatons, out to go sing something, including Up With People.
Wow, that's horrible.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. That was a halftime show.
Yeah.
That's what people thought was good.
So now, when we see J-Lo and Shakira, we're truly excited.
Yes. I mean, Janet Jackson. Miss Jackson, if you're nasty. Okay. We get to see a little bit more of her than we wanted,
right.
than some people wanted to see. But remember how offended they were by that? I'm like, I was offended by Up With People. People. All right. Hold on, Kathy. I got to do this very quickly. About 15 seconds, Kathy. Go ahead.
Bro, it stunk. That's all I have to say. It was terrible. Nobody in the room that was watching it with me liked it at all.
All right. I got that sense. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you. Your vote counts here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. She's on her way to an Iowa caucus site right now. Speaking of that, we're going to talk to Ryan Burrow, who's in Iowa right now, covering all that for us. That's on the other side. But first, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. Ro Khan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, Ryan Burrow joins us right now from Iowa, where he is covering the caucuses for ABC News and for WGN Radio. And I think it should be noted here, Mr. Burrow, that you are the master of the WGN Super Bowl office pool, are you not?
I am.
And
yeah.
Do you have their money? Do you have that money with you right now in Iowa? That's what we'd like to know.
I will Western Union it. I'll get the pony. We'll send it across the river. And,
okay.
Don't worry. You people will get paid, okay? You'll get paid, I promise.
Just saying. People with the squares. Okay. Let's talk about it. Zero is wild. Let's talk about what is happening in Iowa tonight. This is the quadrennial tradition of people standing in corners and rooms and deciding to get swayed over to somebody else's side. This is not your standard primary. Iowa is important, and for reasons that a lot of people don't understand, but I stand by what they do. But explain a little bit about what's happening tonight.
Well, you know, this is interesting because we're not used to voting in front of our neighbors, and that's essentially what this is. I mean, you're getting together in a gymnasium. I'm going to an armory that's right down the street, and basically you and your neighbors sit in a room. You would all be part of the same party, and you would lean against a wall and huddle together in support of one candidate. So the Bernie people would go to one corner, Biden people, Buttigieg people, Yang people. They'd all be kind of spread out around. They'd count the number of people in the caucus room, and then they will say who is deemed a viable candidate. Which of these candidates is above the 15% threshold to move on to the second alignment, the final alignment? Now, if your candidate is not part of that, you can move to a different candidate. So I'm just going to throw it out there. Maybe Tom Steyer, maybe one of those people. You know, his people could then go to Biden, or they could go to Bernie, or they could go to Klobuchar, or something like that.
And not en masse, necessarily, right? People can pair off individually and do that.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Steyer people, and we continue to use him as an example, even though we don't know how this is going to play out, could woo someone else and get over that 15% threshold as well. Maybe, you know, there's another candidate that they can woo over and bump themselves up to 15%. What's new this year is the people who are on the side of the candidate who is over 15%, they're locked in now. Before, they had it where they could, the Bernie people, if they were in the top and they wanted to switch, they could do that. Now they're locked in. But now they're also going to release the results of that full first round poll. So you will know how many people voted for Bernie, and then you might go over to Bernie's side because you're like, well, you know, he seemed to get the most. So it's like a popularity vote in the first round, and then the second round you get that, you know, where you can kind of adjust and move to someone else.
Right. You know who I think is going to have a night tonight? This is a just kind of watching some of the stuff that's happening early on. I think the sneak tonight is going to be Amy Klobuchar.
She spent the most time in this state, 230 stops. Obviously, it's her neighbor there, don't you know, from Minnesota.
Right.
She spent a lot of time. And yeah, I mean, everything kind of hinges on this state for her, because if she does not do well, if she's not deemed a viable candidate in a lot of these caucuses, well, then what's the future? Because I don't know if New Hampshire or South Carolina are quite her game.
Well, the I think it was CNN was down in Florida, where there was an Iowa caucus in Florida. If you are an Iowa resident and you're out of state, Iowa will sanction, the Iowa government will sanction a caucus. And so there was in one like retirement community in Florida, these people are still Iowa citizens, they decided that they were going to they're going to do a caucus. And she did very well in that. Now,
I did not see Bernie do very well in that.
No, which is funny, because Bernie looks like the kind of guy who'd be perfect in a Florida, you know, in a place called Sunrise, Florida, right? At Del Boca Vista, right?
Yes.
And where you're sitting there and everybody's had dinner by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That seems really right down the Bernie thing. But Bernie is the exact, it seems like it would be good for Bernie personally, but the Bernie voter is a younger communist is basically what they are. So that's like a totally different world. But I think that is, she's somebody people have not been talking about very much, because it's all been about Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or the rest of the sort of the bigger names here. But I think that you're going to see a surprise tonight, and I think it might be her. I mean, you know, I don't know that we expected like 4 years ago that you know, the result was going to be what the result was going to be, because for the Republicans, right? I mean, Ted Cruz won.
Ted Cruz won.
And, yeah. You know, won very little else, right? I mean, in terms of, you know, he was out. He was still in the race by the time they got to Illinois, but gone soon thereafter. But it's just, it's a very, people think it's like antiquated and they wonder why do they do it like this? Well, I think it's good because it shows that you have to go meet people where they are. And I think that you have to sort of pass a smell test, if you will. All right, Ryan Burrow, thank you very much. And remember, get back here with the Super Bowl money.
All right, we'll see you guys. Take care.
All right. Ryan Burrow in Iowa for us and for ABC News. Here is Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and the skies? Well, that music can mean only one thing. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200, rips us off for Hawks tickets.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Hawks.
Yeah, that's a good game, too. It's the Hawks taking on the Rangers Wednesday the 19th. That's 2 weeks from Wednesday. This Wednesday, they're going to be at the United Center. The Bruins are going to be in town. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And Kevin, Lauren, and I are going to walk around the concourse. We don't have seats. We just walk around the concourse. You'll see us even in between periods just walking around. We're like the walking man version of fans.
We get our steps in for the day.
That's what we do.
Treat it like the mall.
That's what
just
we
walking around.
We're mall walkers.
That's really true. We actually do treat the United States like a mall. All right. So if you'd like to go, you caller number 19 rips us off for those tickets to go see the Rangers take on the Hawks on the 19th. All brought to us by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on whomever it is. And what a huge win on Saturday night, coming back off of the All-Star break in overtime against the Arizona Coyotes, as they call themselves, the Yotes. And it's it was, that team's actually kind of good this year. It's made up of a bunch of former Blackhawks, which is one of the reasons.
That is true. Massive win for the Hawks, though, because they trail the Coyotes by 3 points in the wild card race for the second wild card. So that was a big 2 points for the Blackhawks coming out of the break.
Exactly. Very big. All right. There's a local story here that has piqued my interest. It should pique yours as well. The Lincoln Park High School, Chicago Public High School here in the near north side of Chicago, has basically ceased basketball operations for this year. And they're moving some of the staff around based on an incident that happened around the holidays of Sean Lewis from WGN TV News is covering this for us. Sean, of a story about an unsanctioned trip that involved some of the students and some of the faculty?
Yeah, unsanctioned for the school. The team itself took this trip to Detroit. During this trip, these allegations came out late December, early January. At first, the head coach for the boys basketball team was removed. And then there were some more allegations, and actually we're debuting this information in the 5 o'clock because we just got it in from a source telling us there are actually 4 investigations happening right now. That may be why we have now the assistant principal being let go last week, and the interim principal, both of whom were very popular with students here at the school, both of them let go with very little explanation other than that there was misconduct and failure to report misconduct and some other allegations. But today we had, during fourth period at Lincoln Park High School, several hundred students walking out of class and protesting, demonstrating outside of Lincoln Park High School on Armitage, demanding some sort of recognition for their inquiries as to why this happened to these people that they have this year said have turned the school around.
It's always the popular ones, you know, who the ones you want to go on the unsanctioned trip with. I'm just going to tell you that. I just remember that from high school. More on that later. But what do we know about any of the allegations here? Anything? Is there any hint of what
right
it might
now,
be?
This is about some sort of misconduct involving students and with adults. Sexual misconduct, we're told, failure to follow the sexual misconduct reporting procedures, repeated ongoing retaliation, we're told, against potential witnesses in this, athletic recruiting violations, and financial misconduct related to the athletic programs. Details about any of those things that I just said, we don't know yet. I mean, some of it involves privacy rules and laws that need to be followed, especially if we're talking about adults and potential minors being involved in the sexual misconduct.
And also Jones Prep got mentioned earlier in news reports surrounding this, too. Are they involved in this? That's another high school in downtown Chicago.
As you know, coaching staffs and also staff at administration and whatnot, they move around from school to school. So it's possible that some of these people here in Lincoln Park used to be at a different school, that type of thing.
Got it.
But right now, one of the other big points for these students, especially those on the basketball team and those who support the basketball team and the parents, saying that canceling the boys' basketball season for the rest of the season here for Lincoln Park's team, not only is a lot of these allegations don't involve a lot of the players, and that, you know, you have recruiters that possibly are still looking at these kids, these boys, right, and potentially we're talking about ramifications in college scholarship money.
Right, right, or opportunities, right? Any kind of
exactly.
opportunities and signing and stuff like that. I mean, Chicago is always a hotbed of school, not necessarily, you know, for elite Division I teams, but you know, these kids get scholarships, you know, in the bottom half of Division I and other Division II, and also exactly. Even in Division III, which is not a scholarship league, there are opportunities and perks for these kids to come to those schools as well. And so we
have all these questions, and really what you heard today from these students and some of the parents is that frustration, the context of why these steps were taken by CPS, seemingly out of nowhere for them, but potentially they'll be finding out some more information tonight that may set some of their questions to rest.
Okay, because that is interesting. And they canceled the basketball schedule for the rest of the season for Lincoln Park High School in Chicago
They have a game scheduled for tomorrow, so perhaps they'll hear some more, something that will satisfy them. And who knows? Maybe what the students did today will have CPS rethinking that suspension of the rest of the season for Lincoln Park High School basketball.
Sean Lewis, WGN-TV News. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
Right, thanks. All right. At Lincoln Park High School on Armitage in Chicago. Let me just say that all I remember were sanctioned or unsanctioned trips from high school. There was always misconduct on them. That's why you went on the trip. There was misconduct. Now, the faculty wasn't always involved in the misconduct, but sometimes they were. I mean, it's, you know, you saw some things. I remember being on trips in high school where, you know, there might have been faculty buying drinks for the people on the trip. If you happen to be like in Canada or a place where they, you know, they weren't actually carding you for any reason.
Were you ordering martinis?
I was not. I didn't do that. Well, I didn't do that till my senior year.
I'll have a Manhattan, please. What?
Right, 15-year-old row.
Let's start with beer.
Right, right. Because all right, if you want a drink, okay, I'll buy you a drink. I mean, if you want to do that? Yes, I'd like a Manhattan. I could a little extra sweet vermouth, please, and a topper of Sprite.
Cherry too, please.
I'm telling you, man. I'm thinking back on. I mean, I don't remember faculty necessarily, you know, getting with the students, which is good. I don't recall that, but the students with the students. Oh my God, it was like it was getting out of, you know, like being in a hotel where you're going on a trip to Springfield or to Washington. A lot of kids go there or whatever it is. I mean, there's room hopping and all kinds of stuff trying to get around.
They used to put tape on the hotel doors so they could see if we open our doors.
Did that work?
I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they tracked it. Everybody was going room to room.
Yeah. But then you have to bring your own tape in a situation
they
like
would
that.
Be like, okay, they would knock on your door, make sure we're in our rooms, and they'd say, okay, it's night. Good night. Everybody go to bed.
What if the tape was broken, though? What did they do?
Well, I don't.
What
was the recourse? I'm sure there were certain instances, yeah. I don't know. Kids just got in trouble.
Oh, man. I mean,
you needed connecting doors.
Yes, right. Exactly. They weren't. Oh. See, everybody knows. I don't know. And to cancel a program over, I mean, as long as this faculty isn't involved. All right, more on that coming your way. But we've got news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, which Kim Gordon is going to be giving you, coming your way in about 2 minutes. And then a top five at five.
Radio Chicago, WGN.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Yes. It is a top five at five. These are the top five most important or interesting or entertaining things that you should know about that happened in the last 24 hours or so. Checking in at
number five.
Rush Limbaugh today announced during his syndicated radio show that he has been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer. He's 69, probably one of the most influential voices in conservative politics of the last 50 years, for sure, and one of the most influential radio personalities of all times. He said that he wanted to be honest and direct with his listeners.
Worst thing that can happen is when there is something going on and you try to hide it and cover it up, it's eventually going to leak, and then people are going to, why didn't you just say it? Why just did it? Why did you try to fool everybody? And it's not that I want to fool anybody. It's just that I don't want to burden anybody with it, and I haven't wanted to. But it is what it is. And you know me, I'm the mayor of Realville. So this has happened, and my intention is to come here every day I can. And to do this program as normally and as competently and as expertly as I do each and every day, because that is the source of my greatest satisfaction professionally, personally.
He was an admitted longtime smoker of cigarettes and then eventually transitioned into cigars. And lung cancer mostly is connected with that, but you never know. There could be other factors as well. I have to say, 31 years ago when he started his nationally syndicated show, the Chicago affiliate, WLS, was his second affiliation after Sacramento, California, where he was coming out of, and then New York City right after that, WABC. It was all part of a deal for the ABC Cap Cities radio network at that point to put him on, and because his show was being produced essentially by former ABC executives. That's how he launched initially. And I was doing middays with him in the early 1990s. It was me, and then it was him, and then me. And he'd come to Chicago. We were on sales trips together. We spent time together in New York and in Florida. I mentioned this earlier. He and I don't necessarily agree on all of our politics, but we do agree on our love for radio and our love for the technique of radio and the tactics and the art of this. And he's one of the greatest in, without question, one of the guys who brought production elements to talk radio that nobody had done before. And I think a lot of people in my generation of this business owe him a debt of gratitude for that, for bringing musical bumpers and for bringing the music you played before, you know, during, after commercials when you're rejoining the program. And other sorts of technique that he brought to it, parody songs and things like that were really morning show, rock and roll morning show or music morning show techniques that he brought to talk radio. And he changed the sound. And again, he changed it along, you know, a very, very stark political line, which was designed to maximize his appeal in a lot of different markets. And he did it particularly well, you know, throughout the country in middle America, I guess one would say. His success was good in major markets, but not what he was really getting in terms of shares and a lot of other places around the country. But he's a very decent human being, too. I think that's one of the most important things. And then when you have moments where, you know, people are in what it sounds like, Rush is in a mortal battle now, so you can put aside the lances here and remember what the contribution and the art, and he represented a point of view a lot of Americans have, and he represented it proudly for those folks that had a voice that they heard that was different from the voices they were hearing in on radio or television and other places, and that they could agree with, and he gave rise to a lot of different things, and Rush Limbaugh again, and you heard it right there. He was honest. He wanted to be forthright about what is going to happen here. He's going to appear on a show as much as he possibly can while he battles lung cancer. And I personally wish him the best in his attempted recovery here. So with having said that, I appreciate the time that he and I were able to spend together. And again, you know, not so much about the politics, but as much as it about the fraternity of what we do in our business, and anybody who's able to amass the kind of audience and the kind of response that he has done something very, very special in our business. So our best wishes go out to Rush Limbaugh today. Lauren Lapka has got the traffic and the weather.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mateer, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
It's the Rokon Show, top 5 at 5 right now on 720 WGN. Stay tuned, because number one is a doozy. It's a doozy. We found the real life Becca, as we like to. That's a character that we have on the show of a young woman who might enjoy White Claw more than she does Logic. And we will win. And it turns out that this Becca's real name is Becca. Wait till you hear this. And some of the audio is from a field sobriety test. So you know it's going to be good. Stay tuned. But before we get to that, we got to get to
number four.
Well, now it's all going to pot. Whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell. We're sure gonna miss it.
Well, I will say this, that Illinois numbers are in terms of the pot. There is the use of legal marijuana in Illinois, $39.2 million in sales total in the month of January. This is the first month. That's a pretty good number right there. And about $8 million of that came in from out-of-state residents coming across the border, right? Dodging across. Got your Indiana types. I mean, listen, I understand the smoking of the weed in Indiana. It's very important. You just want to get the smell of Hammond out of your nose, right? That's the most important thing. So now, there were this is an astounding number when Kim reported 972,000 transactions in 31 days. And remember, it was on January 1, where there's no businesses open. They were open and running out by 10 o'clock in the morning. So the State Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulations reported Jeremy Unruh, PharmaCann's Director of Public and Regulatory Affairs, says that even though there's a pot shortage now, it's hard to tell if sales will be like this every month.
We knew that demand would probably exceed our capacity to comfortably serve that demand. Then it takes 6 months for that build-out to actually occur, and then once that build-out actually occurs, it takes about 3 months to grow and harvest and process those plants. It's not what happens on day one or day two or day three. It's what happens at month six. It's what happens at month 12, at month 18, at month 24. That's the rollout of this program. This program is intended to be rolled out over years, not days.
Yeah. We'll be discussing this on the other side of Kim's News at the bottom of the hour. Because I want to know from people if this is better than your local dealer, the guy in the street corner, the mailroom guy. I want to know if people are using this or they're not, and why they're using it. If you're going to the farm to one of these dispensaries, or you're doing it because you smoked before and now you now that it's legal, you want to do it again now that it's legal. I'm fascinated. Endlessly fascinated by what has happened here. And it's also, I think this is one of the bigger attempts. This is the first major city in the Midwest, certainly, and actually east of Los Angeles. I mean, Denver, obviously, is a pretty big city, but not like Chicago or New York or L.A. And it is interesting to see how it's being handled here. And I think it's going to be very instructive for the rest of the country because we're a test market. All right, we'll get to that, though, after we get through the top five at five.
Number three.
And reminding,
don't you wish we had more homes? And we even had on this show. And now every Bears fan sings a sad, sad song. Don't you wish we had more homes?
Yeah.
Must be nice.
Yeah, that was a song that we did. The great Brian Altimer, our sonic genius, did for us last season. Not even this season. It was last season. And now look what happened. We could have had Patrick Mahomes.
He's won an MVP and a Super Bowl MVP. He's a champion now.
I mean, don't you? If you're the Bears organization. Don't you owe like some sort of apology? Shouldn't they have somebody standing up there apologizing to Bears Nation about this?
That's got to be awkward for Ryan Pace when he's watching the Super Bowl.
Oh God,
you know, because you know he's probably getting some side eye from whoever he's watching the game with.
His wife,
his wife, his kids.
Right,
Dad, you could have had that
yeah.
guy.
What? I mean, really, really? And he traded up. He traded up from number three to number two, basically giving away the next 3 years of draft possibilities.
And that trade was with the 49ers, who happened to be playing the Super Bowl last night.
I mean, his wife is like, that's where you know, she goes into the kitchen, you hear banging of plates and, you know, silverware and other kinds of things.
I'm fine.
Exactly. It's exactly like that.
Nothing's wrong. They slam the door.
I'm not mad. Why do you think I'm mad at you? Right. So a lot of doors slamming at the Pace household last night. All right. Anyway, here is our hero, Patrick Mahomes, talking about what it was like to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, in reality, you never could imagine what this feels like. I mean, it's surreal to be a Super Bowl champion, to know all the hard work that you put in every single day has paid off, and being the champs and being the champs with your brothers. You can never think of that. It's awesome just to know that these guys that are with me, we've all strived to get this goal together. And every single day, we understand it's a long process, and we've put the work in. And to be on top in the end, you know that all that hard work's paid off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, we also need to congratulate Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid, there's no more deserving a coach in the history of the NFL than Andy Reid. He's one of the great, I mean, he already would go down as one of the top five coaches of all times, right, in the 100 years of the NFL. But he had never won a Super Bowl before, which is shocking with all the different teams he's been with. And the Andy Reid coaching tree, which I must also acknowledge, does have Matt Nagy falling from it. But the Andy Reid coaching tree is one of the best in football history. Maybe the best in football history when you stop and you think about it. So, that's...
He's such a likable guy, too.
Yeah.
They all love him, you can tell. They call him Big Red.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome. So, all right. Could you just play the hook of that song one more time for me, please?
Don't you wish we had Mahomes? And we even passed on this show.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Was Deshaun Watson in the playoffs? I can't. Oh, yes, he was, wasn't he? Okay. Let us now move along.
Number two.
Boys are back. Mel Gibson, Danny Glover are getting together with director Richard Donner for the fifth installment of Lethal Weapon. Also, Joe Pesci's going to be in this. Rene Russo's coming back. Mel Gibson was asked by The Hollywood Reporter what it would take. What did it take to get the band all back together?
I don't know. Not too much. I think a good script would do it. And so long as nobody's dropped off the perch, I think we're all right, you know? I mean, the director of the other four, Dick Donner, and he's like, you know, he's still got it. He's not a youngster, but he's still got the goods. He's sharp, full of wit, and his story sense is good, and he's got a ton of energy, so that's good.
You know he's old because he still calls himself Dick. That's how you know when a guy's older. Anybody named Richard, born after 1960, is Richard. Anybody, actually, it's probably even 1950 now. Somewhere in there. Let's call it 55. Let's split the baby. Born before, you're still Dick. After 55, you're Richard. Or Rich. Richie. Funny how the language changes. And finally, here's the one we've been waiting for.
Number one.
Bad boys, what you want?
Oh, my gosh. Dashcam video has now surfaced of an alleged super drunk Michigan State representative in the Michigan House of Representatives. Rebecca Warren from Ann Arbor. She scraped a guardrail and failed a sobriety test in Auburn Hills, even though she said she was driving to Ann Arbor from Detroit. Warren repeatedly questioned police when they asked her to take the preliminary breath test, which she eventually refused.
I'm an elected official. Like, every time my life has been an official. So,
okay.
I'm wearing 5-inch heels, but I can still do whatever you want. I need you right now.
Perfect.
Okay. It was hard to hear that. She lives every day in a fishbowl. Every day in a fishbowl as an elected official. And I like the copper right there. Actually, If he's in Chicago, he's a copper. If he's in Michigan, he's a state trooper or whatever he is. But I like the officer right there. It was like, okay, yeah, okay. She was trying to pull the "Don't you know who I am?" Police love that.
This is career ending for me. Can my Jeep end up where I am at the end of the night, please?
Unfortunately, not. I can't do that.
That just sucks. Could you just tell me if this story is going to be on the news? I'm elected.
They're not going to see
this. People will be like, the senator got arrested. They'll be like, this whole is going to be. This is going to be like the most famous arrest you ever made.
Oh my God. The most.
She truly is a Becca. She's the worst.
She really is. This is like the most famous thing you're ever going to do.
It's a grown up Becca.
That's going to be in the news.
Oh, God. Do we know what happened to her today? I mean, now it's really on the news. You know, if she had just gotten pulled over and she got a DUI, right? I mean, it's not necessarily career ending. I think half the people in Springfield have DUIs. I mean, you can, as long as you go and you handle the situation, you're appropriate, and then you seek treatment or whatever it happens to be, because obviously if you get a DUI, you're having an issue. So you can go do that. There is grace and mercy. There can be, unless you're, "Don't you know who I am?"
This is going to be like the most famous arrest you ever made.
All right. There you go. There she is. That's our Becca of the day right here on the Rokan Show. Let's close this thing up.
The top five at five.
Roll me up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving, so don't sit around and cry. Just roll me up and smoke me when I die.
Well, Willie Nelson, you know, there's no guy who sings about dope better than Willie Nelson.
He's got his own brand.
That is true. He does. All right, wait, hold on. Wait a second. I'll introduce you in a second. Hold on. Illinois rakes in almost $40 million in recreational marijuana, and that's total revenue, but the tax money, that's what I'm most interested in, because I want to see if that actually does make a difference. Because if it doesn't, then it's still fun that we're doing it. But it's that we were sold a bill of goods here, as we always are by Springfield. So the big question that I have is, where does the where for you people out there who are going to the dispensary, when you are going to the dispensary, are you doing it because you just decided now that it's legal, you're going to start back up, or you want to see what it is for the first time, or whatever the draw is? Is this better than your mailroom guy to buy the weed from? Is this better than the guy in the corner, or your brother-in-law who's got, you know, a guy with another person that they figured it out? And I mean, is this working for you? 312-981-7200. Our the weed doctors with us, Andy Seeger. And Andy, thank you for doing this again. You're perfect at explaining how this whole thing works, because you work in the business of legal marijuana.
Yes. Yep. We are a market research firm that researches everything cannabis, CBD, cannabis, all over the world.
Yep.
So hesitate on the doctor. That's a little bit more medicinal. We're a little bit more on the research side.
Okay. You're the weed dude. Okay. So let's talk about this. Is that $40 million a good number, do you think, to start?
That is a huge number. That's the second biggest behind California's opening, if we want to call that. You know, it was a pretty soft opening given the liberal market they had out there before they opened up legal sales.
Mm-hmm.
Nevada came in around 27, I think. Michigan, for their first month of sales.
What was California? Do you remember?
California, we estimated around $70 million.
Yeah.
And it was actually down from their previous year.
But, and now let's just explain that. In California, they had medicinal marijuana, but you could get licensed in the store in California.
They had a
California
guy that would sign your card, and then you could go right back to the line and get your stuff.
I mean, there was a guy who called himself Dr. Bob, and he was in a Hawaiian shirt, and he would sign you off, and you would just go, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, like you said, I mean, it wasn't really – it didn't have the same – like here, these were real – that was a real deal here. If you want to get a medical marijuana card, you had to have a doctor do it. I mean, it was it was harder than it is in other states. Let's put it that way.
California definitely had to wrangle their market back in. I think Illinois is slowly letting their market out. So this is a really, really big number, and I would say that this would even be bigger if we had the supply that would actually meet the demand here.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because when we had you on a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about this, the issue with supply is that the marijuana sold at these dispensaries in Illinois has to be a product of Illinois. And as such, there's only so many facilities that are manufacturing this or growing and manufacturing this stuff, whether it's actual leaf or what do you call it? Bud?
Bud. Flower. Whatever.
Flower, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bow. Or if it's gummies or whatever, all that stuff has to be done here.
Correct.
So to get that up and going and moving in the right direction and producing enough product to meet the demand, we knew it was going to be a slow roll.
Absolutely. We knew this was going to happen, that there were going to be shortages, not just from how many plants were in the ground being able to service these people, but it's still all going through the medicinal channel. So all these dispensaries are actually medicinal marijuana dispensaries that were open before Jan 1 for patients. But they're asked to hold at least 50% of their stock back for patients, to always have access for those medical patients.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some stock out there that can't be sold on the medical or the legal market.
Even if
it has to be held aside.
By store, they would know their business, essentially.
Yes.
They would have an understanding, because these guys have been in the medical for 2 years prior to this,
at least.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they would understand what their product flow is.
Yep.
And they got set up to have additional product here for January 1, right?
As much as they could.
Yeah. Again, based on what was available. And these grow facilities, they've been doing this now since medical marijuana in Illinois. Will there be more grow facilities coming online here?
Yes, absolutely. So the licenses for the craft growers just opened up. Those are going to be kind of smaller grow operations. But what's probably going to open it up more is the scalable ones, the ones that are big right now that are going to expand to a couple 100,000 square feet. You know, not the craft growers that are down at 14,000 square feet of canopy space, but the big guys are going to come out here and start, you know, massively growing these forests of flower.
Yeah. Now, when these grow facilities... Are there what's the national overlay here? What are there national companies that are coming in and aggregating all of these? And you know, so when, let's say, Kansas goes legal, or which, you know, congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs, by the way,
Missouri
or Iowa or whatever, let's just say, you know, when any of these other things, so these national companies are. Funding these or owning these?
Yeah, we call them multi-state operators. So since everything has to be, you know, done completely here in Illinois, like you talked about before, they'll go and set up shop in a new state, and then create everything from the plant on up to retail. So a vertical integration. So these are, you know, from out-of-state players that are sometimes backing the small business applicants here as well, but also bringing in their opportunity to get in the foothold in with the medical establishments.
Okay, our marijuana guru, Andy Seeger, is with us. We're going to come back to him. And I want to get your phone calls at 312-981-7200. I'd be interested in this, too. And what's your take on this is, too, Andy. Who is the market right now for now recreational marijuana? Is it people who are new or returning to marijuana now that it's legal? They smoked it maybe when they were kids or in school or whatever it was, and now they're coming back later in life? Or is it people who were in the gray or black market for it and have decided to go legal, and what your experience with that is? Because not that I know this firsthand, but I will just say that I have some friends who are now complaining about the fact that they want to go back to their pot guy because the guy's got the supply that they were looking for, especially if you're buying.
Keep
bud.
Your local.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Exactly. Buy local. Exactly right, Andy Seeger. All right, we'll come right back. But first, let's check in traffic and weather. Lauren Lapka.
Well, let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint. Turn the radio loud. I'm too alone.
Andy Seeger is with us. He's research manager at Brightfield Group. The numbers are in for the state of Illinois in terms of what they made here in the month of January on marijuana sales. close to $40 million, which makes it the second largest behind California, second largest one month the opening for a state. So congratulations, potheads. You've done a great job here in terms of getting people out there. There are still a lot of rules, and we'll get right to the phones here at 981-7200. Old habits die hard, Andy. There is a good, it's a good story, but it's not really the end of the story because there's going to be expansion here, right?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think we're seeing even a fraction of the demand we could see in the future.
Where do you, before we go to the calls, I want to, what do you think? Because you're a research manager here at Brightfield, so you're looking at this. What do you think the majority, what is your sense of the motivation for people who are going now to do the recreational marijuana, buy the recreational marijuana here?
Yeah, a lot of it's safety. They know it's going to be accessible. What's in it? It's clarity of ingredients. You know what you're getting. Sometimes you don't always know what you're going to get in that little sandwich bag, whether it's sativa, indica. You know, if you're looking to cure insomnia and you get something that's going to hype you up a little bit, that's going to mess you up. So they're looking for that that knowledgeable base, access, security, the ease. So the functionality of it is all new to them as well.
You know, that's an interesting thing because that was always the issue. You never knew what you were getting, right?
Sticks, I mean, stem seeds,
right? And there was the thing with, especially, you know, people who are smoking in high school or college or what, you know, young adults, whatever it happened to be, however you got into it. You know, in alcohol, you always just say, well, people are 21 and over. But in marijuana, I don't think we have to say that yet. People who did get into it, and you had the regular guy at school or whatever who was the drug dealer who always had the supply, it was completely inconsistent,
yeah.
Right? I mean, at least back in, you know, back right. in my day. And we were worried about paraquat back then because there it was so I don't even want to explain that to the kids where the government tried to kill everybody who was smoking marijuana. But that really did happen. All right, so let's go to the phone. 312-981-7200. Josh, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Josh.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
So I've been to the...
Uh-oh.
He's been to something. Probably a dispensary.
You know, the one problem, I will say this, Andy, and without any... I'm not judging, but I'm just saying... When you do a stoner topic, the phone calls are sometimes inconsistent.
These
in terms
are my
of
people.
The use of the telephone itself. Scott, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, yeah, I was just wondering. I'm here in Indiana, so obviously we're very conservative in the government, and it looks like we're not going to have any legalization until it goes federal. So I was curious what the timeline might be before it's federally recognized as legit, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, now that's sit down and wait for your answer. That's interesting because do you think that's true in Indiana that they won't go until there's a federal overlay?
They could be really dragging their feet. They have they're very, very restrictive. But we also saw that in that 40 million number in Illinois, almost 8.5 of it was from out of state. So a full fourth of the market here in Illinois is from out of state citizens, and that's all around. I mean, Rockford's having a ton of sales. East St. Louis, the Gary area, all across.
So coming from Wisconsin, from Rockford, Wisconsin to Rockford. Galena is getting Iowa, right?
Absolutely.
And then
St. Louis from Missouri, and Gary from Indiana. I mean, there's demand out there from everywhere. So Indiana absolutely has this demand. And like our caller Scott said, it's kind of restrictive there because of their very conservative government. So if federal legislation is required to pass for Indiana to come along, that's going to take a long time. We're either going to see pressure on these politicians really ramp up, as I think it's about 69% of America now supports legalization.
Yeah.
That's a pretty high number, and that cuts across a lot of demographics, red and blue. So this could start to push pressure on people across aisles, and we're seeing that in conservative states. We're seeing that in New Mexico, Arizona. We're looking at big in the next couple of months here with their legislature, as well as the eastern bloc of states. So this is everywhere. This is everybody.
The OS, the original stoner, is 70 years old now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, look at Bernie. You don't think Bernie was on the skeech? I can tell you he was. I just look at him, he was. I mean, all those documentaries about the guys in Vietnam who were getting high, smoking dope out of their M16s.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's that. So this is not new. This is not like a kid's problem. As a matter of fact, quite honestly, I think the millennial is really not the key target right now because there's other stuff, I think, for them. Right. Yep. And that's going to be a whole other world, by the way. That's because, I mean, God knows where we're going next.
It's
psilocybin and all the rest
yeah.
of it. That's
coming.
Right. That people want to bring online. Linda, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi. Well, I bought stocks last March And one is more into the medical marijuana, and the other is into the recreational marijuana. They've both gone down badly, and even since January 1st, they've continued to decline. And you have to buy them through the Canadian Stock Exchange because of what the prior gentleman just explained. So I just wonder if you have any insight into why that is.
Oh, Andy's got thoughts on this. Yeah. You called the right place for this.
I'm glad I got my economics degree. Yeah. So a lot of the cash came out of these companies. They were heavily overvaluated when they were going on up there. They were the hot ticket items up there.
Right.
And we saw a lot of cash flood into them so that they could expand and try to meet demand of what was going on up in Canada. Canada government is really rather open, but it still limits their opening. So nothing is quite as successful as everybody thought. It was a very tough year for Canadian firms and cannabis firms in general. So we saw a lot of the liquidation, a lot of the valuation come out of the market in the second half of last year, and a lot of those stocks went down, even though this is a very hot market.
Well, it's interesting, too, Linda, is two things. I mean, this is not professional advice because I'm not allowed to give you professional advice. I'm just going to give you my opinion, which is that the Canadian Stock Exchange is where you have to be right now. But when this happens in the United States, that Canadian Stock Exchange product, unless it's getting bought by an American company, is not necessarily going to be, it's going to lose its value unless it gets sucked up into an American company. Now, for example, there are alliances. Canopy, I don't know if you're invested in that, but Canopy is now aligned with Constellation Brands, which is one of the largest liquor and beer distributors in the world. So they have an agreement at this point, but they're not, it's because of the federal banking rules that it just doesn't turn around like that, right?
There's a firewall in between.
Yes, exactly. All right, and quickly, Steve, this is a great question, and I'd like to know the answer to this, too. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. How do you bank this cannabis? Like, I know it's cash. Do they take debit cards? Do they take credit cards? And then operationally, like, how do you pay taxes? How do you pay your employees? I mean, it's got to be really, really difficult. But
yeah. So that's a great question. We got about 20 seconds.
Steve hits the absolute biggest question in the market right now. How do you bank? And right now, it is just a map of cash boxes because everything is in cash. They do W-2s in cash. If they are doing W-2s, then they should be. Everything's in cash. So us need to be putting pressure on the government to bring that banking to the industry if this industry is going to be healthy and maintain itself.
So at a dispensary, an employee is getting paid in cash every 2 weeks or every week or
whatever
it is?
They don't take debit. Most of them will not take debit. They'll have an ATM on site. It's all cash transactions.
Wow. Wow. Andy Seeger from Brightfield Group, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. We got the
thank
news
you.
Coming your way in 2 minutes.
Radio Chicago.
Rokan Show, 720 WGN. All right, the World Health Organization has declared the Wuhan novel coronavirus to be pandemic. It is predicting it will be at pandemic rates. Should I be scared? I walked into an office building today, and people were wearing surgical masks. What am I to make of this? There's only one man who can answer that, Alex Stone. Stone Pony from ABC News. All right. So the world seems to be very upset about this. I'm not seeing that much panic in the United States other than me.
Yeah. And then I flew on Friday night and then flew back yesterday. And there were probably half a dozen people on our Southwest flight that were wearing surgical masks and a lot more people at the airport. So there are a few here and there that are deciding they're going to do something. But the numbers are rising and they're rising pretty dramatically. The World Health Organization believes there are at least 17,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus in the world right now. Most of them are in China. The number of dead in China has been rising as well, now at 361. And there is a belief that the numbers in China are probably a lot higher, either because of a attempt to put out misinformation or because they just can't keep up with the numbers. There are some estimates it could be 70 or 75,000 who have coronavirus right now, but that China just, you know, with their makeshift hospitals that they're creating and everything else that they're doing, that they can't get an accurate count. So that's why we really don't know. And then there are the Americans who want to get out, but for any number of reasons can't, even though there are more evacuation flights going. Yeah, one of them we heard from today, Justin Steese, he is married to a Chinese national. They've got a young baby boy. He is teaching English. He's from Minnesota, 26 years old, teaching English there. And because his wife is not American, they cannot leave. Well, he can, but then he'd have to leave her family, and, yeah, and the baby, maybe. And he says he's not going to do it. Here's what he just told us.
I'm just getting a huge runaround. It's so, so frustrating because I served 5 years in the military, and I get completely shafted when we need help, an evacuation of these American citizens.
He says that, everybody's been giving him the runaround, that he's talked to the CDC, who says talk to the embassy. The embassy says talk to the State Department. He says, yeah, but you are the State Department. They say, well, talk to them anyway. State Department tells him talk to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. They tell him, no, go back to the embassy. And then he can't get a good answer. He says the Italians, the French, the U.K., their evacuation flights have allowed those on board who have loved ones who they have now married, and then if they get health checked out, then they're allowed to come with their U.S., or in that case, U.K. or Italian or French,
yeah,
citizen spouse, but not in this case. He says that he's just, right now, they badly want to get out of Roe. He took us on a tour outside of his house, and, I mean, it looks like something out of a movie. The streets of Wuhan, completely empty. He put on a mask, sunglasses to go out. He said he runs out. Every once in a while, they'll find a little small shop that's open so he can get supplies for their baby. He gets it and then goes right back in. They shut everything down, lock everything. Just like, I mean, what was that Will Smith movie where there was...
He's the last man alive.
Something,
yeah,
going around.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what he shows. Everybody is locked inside their homes, not coming out. The local population, and there are those who want to get out.
Yeah, that is heartbreaking. And now there was a flight that did come in, and then those people have been taken to a military base, right? And they have to be quarantined for...
They're in March Air Reserve Base in California. They're being quarantined. So there are going to be a few more flights, evacuation flights, we now know, that are going to go in. There are four different military bases in California, Colorado, and Texas where they are going to be going, and they will be held in quarantine there. But you know, if it's a case like Justin Cease, they can't get on. Well, he could get on, but the rest of his family couldn't get on. We also heard from a guy named Sergey McCray from Virginia. He's teaching English in China as well. He doesn't want to go. He says his parents are freaked out about him, but he says, you know, he feels like that he can survive this, and he's just hunkered down. He plays most of his days he's playing video games. He showed us around the one shop that he's found open. It's a mess. I mean, there's just stuff all over the floors. But he says he can go in there and get food and get supplies that he needs. Then he goes back in and does the same thing. Shut everything down, lock it, and stay inside. That everybody is told to stay inside. You know, people are looking out their windows to see what car they heard go by, but really not a lot of traffic out on the streets.
Wow. That is,
and that's a city, by the way, of 11 million people.
In Wuhan province.
Yeah, well, that area, 11 million. I mean, that would be a major metropolitan area here in
yes,
the U.S.
Right.
But, then they are on lockdown right now.
It'd be equivalent, I think we're at 9.5 million metropolitan area. So it'd be bigger than the Chicago metropolitan area. And everybody is on lockdown. I get it, and it is all very scary. But as we pointed out, the death toll, if the numbers are holding, again, you just pointed to something, Alex Stone from ABC News, that's important. The Chinese government, we can't necessarily rely on all the numbers that they're giving us or the story that they're telling us, because they've been known to try to make things rosier than they are to make themselves look good. I don't know where I've ever heard that before, but it seems to be very popular around the world. This is a problem because right now we're assuming that the death rate on this virus is about 2 or 3%, but it could be a lot lower than that because there may be a lot of people who get it and are able to, they don't report actually having had it, right? They just, because they got sick, they stayed at home, they didn't really seek medical attention, and they were able to get through it because it's a virus, and it's a 4 to 7 day experience for that virus to work its way through your system. And it's not, if you don't react badly to it, then you're probably going to get through it like a flu.
Well, and if you don't know, let's say it is person to person, there's only two of those cases in the U.S. right now, but a lot more in China, that you don't know that you've been around somebody who's had it, then you may not think that that's what it is, and maybe you're strong enough to get through it, and then, yeah, you think that you just had the cold, but you haven't been to China, so why would you get tested for coronavirus? There are two cases, the one in Illinois, one in California, where it is person to person now, that they were close to those who had been in Wuhan. In the California cases, the original person with it and his spouse, who now she has it, They today were put in a hospital because their health is deteriorating. They, when it was confirmed yesterday, they were staying at home. They were isolating themselves there. They didn't think they needed medical treatment. Today they were via special ambulance sent to San Francisco, and now they're in isolation in San Francisco because their condition is going downhill. But, you know, it's the whole question, and the CDC says they expect there are going to be more cases of person-to-person, and there are going to be more cases in general in the U.S. Yeah. just because of the explosive outbreak in China, but they have no clue at this point just how big it's going to get.
Alex Stone, ABC News, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, bro.
Lauren Lapka, traffic and the weather.
Bob Sirott!
A Loop Dining Institution turns 40. Not bad, since the average lifespan of a new restaurant is about 20 minutes. We'll get to that after the 7:30 news. Bob Sirott, mornings, WGN.
Thank you, Bob. All right, try to get myself calmed down after we had this conversation about the Wuhan virus. And Alex Stone, I was hoping that from ABC News was going to make me calmer about this. But now that the American couple in California that apparently is a person-to-person transmission, they were at home, they were just getting through it like it was a bad flu or a super bad cold, and now they've had to be hospitalized because their medical condition has become tenuous. So something to think about. And that also tells you that maybe the numbers that are coming out of China are not 100% accurate. So I'm less calm. All right. One of the stories I heard in the news that I thought was very interesting today is this unionization of Instacart drivers. This, not so much that they're unionizing or whatever it's going to be. That's, you know, that's up to them. They can figure all that out. But I do like the idea of a Teamster showing up with my gigantic 64-roll toilet paper box. You know, that because that's the only time I use those services is to buy like big bulk things, because I figure, I'll let them carry it, because there is nothing worse than going to Target or going to the Jewels or wherever you're going to go. And you get the big toilet paper thing.
Takes up your whole cart.
Right. Takes up the whole cart, and you're walking around, and then people are just thinking about, you know, stanky rear. That's all I can think about. When I see people with their toilet paper thing.
Row.
And
it's actually the people who put the groceries together inside the store, not the drivers.
Oh, all right. Well,
so it's the people who are shopping thing. For your groceries. So,
but those are the people I want to talk about here, because I happen to have been at the store over the weekend. Was trying to get, you know, all right. So, you know, perhaps it's a mistake to go on a Saturday to a grocery store. Perhaps, you know, it's prime time, especially the Saturday before Super Bowl Sunday, you know, sort of thing. And I'm going through, and I went to the Whole Foods, you know, because I would like to go there because I like to check out with a guy who's got a pierced eyeball wearing a hemp shirt. That's my favorite thing. And a tattoo that I can't quite figure out how it's so intricate. You're like, how did you do that? And why does every one of the checkout people at Whole Foods look exactly like that? Do they go out? Is there casting for that, where they find people? Like, you have to, like, when you apply, you have to show your tattoos. Go, you'd be perfect for aisle 6. Anyway, I'm there. I cannot get through the aisles. First of all, the great tragedy was I couldn't get to the bar fast enough to get my glass of wine to walk through the Whole Foods with, which is the only reason that I now enjoy going to the grocery store. It was my job when I was a kid. My parents would send me to the grocery store. From the time I was like 10, they were sending me to the grocery store to do grocery shopping. And I hated it. Hated it. But now I'm really good at it. And I love the idea that almost anywhere you go, Jewel has it. I can't believe they didn't think about this before. If you could walk around with a beer or a glass of wine, it's so much more civilized. But I can't even get through the aisles because there's all these professional shoppers. You can't, it's like, shouldn't there be like a distribution center for them? Shouldn't that be the way it goes?
This is like rideshare drivers clogging up the downtown streets of Chicago.
Exactly right. And the aisles are getting smaller and smaller and smaller at the stores. The Jewel in my neighborhood, you can't even get one cart down an aisle. When the little old lady makes her turn and is coming down the aisle at me, I got to stop, back out my cart. I can't even turn my cart around. I have to back my cart out, take it, and then go to the left and then wait for her to come through. It's like a right-of-way issue. And then there, you got all these people. And you know, and you can tell the professional shoppers, right? Because they're constantly staring at some screen while they're doing it, and they also just don't. They look like they know what they're doing, which most everybody else in the store is trying to figure out. You know, where's the cream cheese going to be? Why isn't it with the dairy? Where did you put it? These people know. So as a matter of fact, I was using them on Saturday to ask them where things were because they actually know, I think, better than what the store people know. Oh, yeah, no, that's aisle 6. That's over there. Like, get out of my way!
So how quickly are they moving? Do they get paid depending on how quickly they get it to the customer? Or they're not like sprinting through the aisles, are they?
No. They seem to be moving.
There's an urgency.
Well, I think they're better orchestrated. They have better planning than I do. Like, I have my list, and I go to my Whole Foods all the time. I mean, I know sort of essentially. I know quadrants. Okay, this is going to be over in this quadrant of the store. This is going to be over in that quadrant of the store, but I don't know exact aisles. And then I get lost in the aisle, and then I decide I'm going to go back over and get another glass of wine and then come back through. And then if you're 2 glasses of wine in, you know, by the end of the shopping, it's like I brought things home I shouldn't be bringing home. You know, all of a sudden there's like a lobster that I decided would be a good pet. You know, it gets a little weird. But they know the people, to your point, Kevin, the people who are the regular shoppers, right? I mean, they're the ones you almost kind of want to follow them because they sort of have a ride. Unlike the Uber people who you don't want to follow. Because they have no idea what they're doing. These are people who actually do know. Because it's not the... I don't think that there's geo-locating inside the store for them. I think they have to know at this point. They have to be intuitive about what it is. You know, they know what it is. And I don't think that's guiding them to it. Because if that were the case, then they should just be doing this at a warehouse and get the hell out of my store. Because you're in my way. I need to get to my radicchio. And I could not get to my radicchio. And speaking of that, they were out of radicchio. I had no idea that that was going to be a Super Bowl problem. Anyway, I would like them to figure this out. Them meaning whether it's Amazon, who does it for Whole Foods, obviously, or Instacart that's at the other stores, whatever the situation is. And Kim, which store are they unionizing in?
The Mariano's in Skokie.
So just at one location?
Yeah, just one.
Okay. And these are the Packers.
These are the Packers. I think it's just about 15 people that are unionizing, but they're the first to do it through Instacart. They're the first Instacart employees to do this.
I thought it was interesting because at Whole Foods, they have the people who are the Packers. You can see them because you got the shoppers working the aisles, and then they're handing off to these Packers who are labeling everything. Everything is coming off, and it's labeling like almost like baggage at the airport. You know, they've got these long strips, and it's closing off the bags, and it's got a list of what's in each bag. It's actually pretty... It's pretty intricate and hands-on. But eventually, humans won't have to be in that chain. Which is, so you're going to see a relationship between unionization and then these companies deciding that they're just going to go full automation. No, there's no good answer here. But just get out of my store. That is all I am asking for, and I think the rest of us who are enjoy or feel compelled to go to the store because you want to touch the stuff before it's bought. I don't like the idea of leaving it up to somebody else to pick my tomatoes.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that's where you kind of draw the line, right?
Right. The tomato, the radicchio, it doesn't really go bad, but I guess it could start browning around the edges. That would be a problem. But salad stuff, anything that fruits, vegetables. Fish, right? Like if you go and you're going to buy fish, like at the Whole Foods, they got a special like fish area, which somehow they've made not smell bad anymore. When you used to go to those places, they never figured that out, but now they have figured it out. I'd like to know what they've done because I'd like to get that in my house, whatever that air filtration program is. But you go to the fish and I'm pointing at what it is I want, right? If I send a shopper, I'm not trusting them. They're going to give them. Don't worry about it. When he gets it, he's not going to return it.
There's no way I'm letting somebody pick my steak.
Right.
It's like fun for me.
Yeah. It is. And how do they know when you're going to use your avocado? Like, do you want it for 2 days from now or do you want it tonight?
Excellent point.
Yeah. Got to check the firmness.
I always do. The steak thing is an interesting point, too, because I could just tell Kevin's one of those guys. No, 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 not that one. No, the one back there. No, 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 back is front. No, no, that toward me. Toward me, not toward you.
That's definitely me.
I'm picking about the steak. It's like, right. You know, it's a, you're excited about a steak.
It's true. That's the marbling I'm looking for. That's right.
Then I start talking to it slowly. Look at that beauty. Yeah, that's the one right there.
All right. I'm just saying. All right, we've got, let me do this. Let's get the news with from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon moving, and then we're back on the other side. Right? That's what I meant to say. 6:30, Chicago. You know, they say don't be the news in our business. We should not be the news. We should be telling you about the news. Don't make the news. Well, we are right now because we have a, how is this being described? Lauren Lapka?
So the way that it was put out on the Chicago Scanner Twitter account is a blind shaft elevator rescue at 303 East Wacker.
That's here.
Yes.
In our own building.
I know.
Now, I just looked out and you can see because we're on the a higher floor of this building. You can't like look straight down and see what's going on. But I can see in the reflection of all the high rises around us in the windows, this building is surrounded by emergency equipment. Now, what does, and that, I would like to know what the answer is, what is a blind shaft rescue?
Well, we had a Vic Vaughn look that up, and apparently it's when it's trapped between floors, so there's not like a door to get to the elevator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kevin Powell went downstairs for us. Kevin?
Yes, I'm reporting live from the lobby of 303 East Wacker, yeah. Yes, as you mentioned, there are... A fire truck parked outside, and there are some firemen right now working on opening the elevator. It appears someone is stuck in the elevator. So they're doing everything they can right now to open the elevator doors.
How did you get down there?
Very, I thought it was very brave of me to take the elevator down.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's what he did.
Elevator story. That's the dedication I have for the radio station.
Because Lauren and I are going to walk down the flight of stairs. We're going to take the whole thing. I see more emergency equipment heading toward us right now. Actually.
Yeah, well, when I got in the elevator, my initial thought was like, wait, why am I taking the elevator? But we're here. I can try to get some more information from the fireman here.
Yes.
But
yeah, you know what? But my suggestion is don't go up there and go, Kevin Powell, WGN News. Just go up there and go, hey, dudes, what's happening? And then come back and report. I think it's a better way to do that.
Somebody's stuck. Yeah, just confirm there's somebody stuck.
There's somebody
in the elevator.
Do we know? Is it one of our people? Do we know which shaft?
It's a different bank than ours, the one we use.
Oh,
so.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think we're clear there.
All I see, though,
a little bit.
I mean, it's an amazing. I mean, thank God, because you know, if you've ever been stuck in an elevator, you wanna hope
what's going
that,
on in there?
Right, that everybody, you wanna hope that the whole world is trying to get you out of that elevator. And I can just tell you right now that those people who are stuck in that elevator, I know this is cold comfort, but I like having an isolated person right now listening because you gotta spend time with us. There's a boatload of a response down there by the Chicago Fire Department. So there's just nothing. What? What do you mean? Oh boy, what?
More equipment's being brought into the lobby here. Looks like serious business.
I did notice that those are the trucks I just saw pulling. They just came off Lakeshore Drive to the west to our building here, 303 East Wacker. There is office space available here, by the way. Because we don't have the best elevators. I will acknowledge that.
Yeah, there at times could be a bit interesting. Quite the ride. Yeah.
Do you know, it's funny because a couple of weeks ago we were at the Hawks game and we were talking to some folks who are in the elevator business. It's a the elevator repair industry. And this guy says to me, goes, where do you work? And I said, 303 Wacker. He goes, oh, yeah. And he had like a whole story about the elevator situation here. And I'm like, I don't want to know. Do not tell me that. Oh yeah.
I mean, there's a firefighter here that looks like he's decked out ready to climb Mount Everest. He's got all sorts of gear with him, a backpack, heavy coat. Kim Gordon from the WGN Newsroom is also in the lobby doing some investigative work for us. What do you know, Kim?
So here's what I can tell you. They're on the express elevator, so it means the person is, they're doing okay, they're fine, and they're stuck in between floors. They hope to be able to move the elevator to get the person out, but they're setting up just in case they have to go in on top to get them out. But They've only been stuck for just maybe 15 minutes or so. It hasn't been very long, but they're working to get them out safely.
15 minutes is a long time to be stuck in an elevator.
What if they had to go to the bathroom?
I know.
Oh, my God.
But that's horrible. Here's the thing, though. Even once you get stuck, even if you didn't have to go to the bathroom, now you got to go to the bathroom.
Exactly. And it's in the floors, 21 to 28. So, they're pretty high up there.
Oh, man. So they have to go up into the top and then get dropped down onto them. They have to get over them and then go in through the...
Right,
there's a little hatch at the top.
They hope not to do that, but they're setting up just in case.
That's the guy with all the ropes on him that's down in the lobby here at 303 Wacker. Is that what's going
on? Yes, and there are several people with hard hats on and Chicago Fire Department officials are here working on it. I guess they have lights on the front of their helmets as well, so if they have to see down into the shaft, they can see better to get the person out.
Wow. They are really good. I mean, we do have the best vertical rescue system in America here. You would think.
Oh, yeah.
We always win that. They do this. There's an international competition for fire departments around the world that have a lot of high-rise buildings. So it's us, New York, Tokyo, Singapore, and Chicago wins that thing almost every, I think it's done every 2 years or something like that, wins it all the time in terms of vertical rescue and in terms of dealing with fires and high rises. There's a whole specific kind of skill here. And if you're just joining us, here's what's happening. We're in our building right now. We are the news. There is there's more fire equipment than I've ever seen anywhere.
Yes, there's several. Well, and also, we just have the fire department just right next door, so that helps.
There's fire equipment surrounding our building right now as they're trying to get somebody who's stuck on an elevator out of the elevator. So, but they have to do the vertical, the blind shaft rescue, which means potentially on the wires.
Did Kevin define for you what blind shaft is? Because I found out that's a term they use when it's an express elevator because it doesn't stop at every floor. So that's their term for an elevator that basically doesn't stop floor to floor, that it goes to just certain specific floors.
Blind shaft rescue was my blues name, actually, back in the 1970s. All right, we'll get back to this.
We'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Kim Gordon in the lobby.
I think whoever's stuck is in very, very good hands. I see a lot of people here who want to get this person out safely.
All right. There you go. Thank you,
okay.
Kim Gordon.
Uh-huh.
All right. Lauren, can you tell me what the traffic is on the 18th floor here? For those who are joining us and wondering about the Kim Fox interview that we were supposed to have here on the Rokan show, Kim Fox canceled her appearance here earlier today. Not a gigantic shock.
Yeah, shortly after you were talking about the situation and how brave she was for agreeing to be interviewed by you.
Mm-hmm.
How weird.
I was giving her props for agreeing to do it because obviously I have been a pretty vocal critic of Kim Fox as the Cook County State's Attorney. And I thought, well, this is great that she's going to come on and we're going to talk about all these issues. We'll talk about, why that Smollett thing happened and would she do differently? And now crime numbers are starting to creep back up. You just heard in Kim Gordon's news at the bottom of the hour that the murder rate, the shooting rate, murder rate are up year to year in January. You also have dramatic numbers of people who are back out on the street who have been involved in weapons violations and things like that. And I would like to just get an idea, an answer for how does this actually, in terms of social justice, which I understand the motive of social justice, and I support the motive of social justice, but does this make the streets safer if you've got people who are felons who are caught with weapons and then they're just sent back out on the street? Oh, I'm sorry you got the weapon. I'm so sorry. So sorry. You should just go back out. We'll take that from you. And you just go back out there. And we'll see you next week when you get another one. Right? I mean, that was the thing. And then all of a sudden we get the cancellation from the office. Like, oh, yeah. There's a campaign thing. It was real super important that she had to go do. So there we have it. So I'm just letting you know. They said they'd like to reschedule, but they would not give us a firm reschedule date. I believe the day. Let me look here. What's available? Hell freezing over day. What day is that?
I think that's the 13th this year.
13th.
Yeah.
All right. Mark her down for the 13th. Okay. It's been very dramatic here at the Rokan Show. on 720 WGN. We sent our own Kevin Powell down to the lobby of our building here, 303 East Wacker in beautiful downtown Chicago, and our own Kim Gordon to cover this story. There's a breaking news story here in the building. There are people caught on an elevator in a blind shaft rescue, which means that it's a part of the building. This is a 28-story building. There's part of the elevators that go up to the 21st to 28th tier that do not have doors to get in or out of the elevator. They're stuck in that no man's land. We've seen this happen in other buildings. We saw this happen at the Hancock Center, actually, last year, where they actually had to go through a wall to get the people out of the elevator. So we have a similar kind of situation happening here. We sent Kevin down. Now we anticipated that he was going to return. He has not yet returned.
Did you see the picture he posted?
I did not.
There's at least like a dozen people just in the picture that he took, all standing by the elevator doors.
Can you get him back on the board? Let's see if he got in an elevator. Now, this is, I think, the real question for somebody like myself. And I believe that Lauren also falls into this category. Bit of a, I would call myself a bit of a panicker.
I am for this situation, for sure.
Because it's the claustrophobia kind of thing. I try not to think about this. I've lived my whole life in elevators. I grew up in an apartment building that was a high-rise apartment building. Every day of my life, I've been on an elevator for some reason. And thankfully, with the exception of a very short, like 30 seconds, which was a very panicky 30 seconds, I have never been stuck on an elevator. And I don't intend to be tonight. So I'm going to rappel off the side of the building. I somehow would feel safer rappelling than I would getting on an elevator.
I do wonder what happened and if we have to worry about the other elevators.
How do we get out of here? This is, you know what? This is like one of those movies. As you're sitting in your car or in your home or wherever you happen to be, maybe in the office or on the internet, whatever, and listening to this radio broadcast, it's like a movie in the sense that we don't know how we're going to get out of here. We're at like the Nakatomi Tower right now.
Yeah, trapped on the 18th floor. I think that is totally a movie.
Hans Gruber is, you know, he's up on 28. We're trying to get a hold of Kevin, but we cannot find him at the moment. Did we find him? We got him? We're just afraid that he said something to a firefighter, and next thing you know, kid.
Yeah.
Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm not messing with these firefighters. This is the Squad 2 Special Ops Firehouse that are here. So we were told three people are stuck in the elevator car. They've pried the doors open to the shaft where the car is stuck. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's about 2,000 firefighters here, fire trucks outside, multiple firefighter vehicles parked outside 303 Wacker. But yeah, we were told three people stuck.
Three people stuck. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And do we know, they're high up here, right?
Yeah, we were told, what floor is it stuck on? 15th floor.
Oh, right below us.
Yeah.
Should we go knock on the wall and see if we can make contact with
them? Are you okay? Hello?
Maybe send some sandwiches to them.
Yes.
Probably getting a little cranky up there.
Can we pump the station in? Can we lower a speaker like we did to the... we have a bodega down in the basement here. We actually lowered a speaker down there so they can listen to us just down there in Mr. Patel's shop down there. Can we do that? God, I hope it's not Mr. Patel. Is it anybody we know?
We can try.
That's because now
Kim Gordon's got more information.
All right, here. Kim Gordon is now going to report. What do you have for us, Kim?
Okay, so now they are waiting for the elevator company to get here. They're on their way. They should be here in the next 5 to 10 minutes. They're hoping the elevator company can take care of it. Otherwise, they'll go in and rescue the people. But it is confirmed now there are three people in the elevator. They have electricity. They all seem to be okay. We're waiting for the elevator company to see if they can resolve the issue.
See, now, shouldn't the elevator company, I mean, shouldn't they, I think you could call them and like, all right, we'll get there. We can probably get there in the next 6 to 8 hours. I mean, shouldn't they like be here like right now?
Well, You would think so.
That
but
because
I don't know how
this
far
has been going on for 40 minutes here already, almost.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while. So yeah. They're between floors, and they're just hopefully the elevator company will be able to take care of it. Otherwise, there are a lot of men here who are willing to get in the elevator and
get into the shaft and descend themselves into the shaft. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they attach themselves to in that shaft to get down the thing?
I don't know. I mean, we're not seeing a ton. We see a lot of boxed up equipment, so I can't really tell you exactly what they use because everything's in backpacks and bags, and they're not unpacking just yet. They're hoping to get it resolved with that. But there is an ambulance and EMS here standing by just in case to check everybody out once they get off the elevator, but everyone so far says they're doing fine.
I'm panicking about this. Could they send them up in the meantime just to see me? And then if there's something else.
I'm sure I'll send them right up.
Right. Since they're here. And, you know, I'd also like them to take a look at this. There's this one thing. It looks like a mall. I think it's a mall. If they could just send a paramedic up to take a look at that, that'd be good for me, too. All right.
A stretcher and two guys in blue gloves. They'll be happy to take a look at you, Ro. We'll send them up.
Thank you, Kim. All right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Kim Gordon reporting live from our lobby, where there's police and fire activity here in the building as there's people stuck in between floors, in between 28 and well, 15 now we're being told, 15 stories above in an elevator shaft. Nothing is moving, but you can't get to them because it's a blind elevator shaft. There's no doors to get into the elevator from there because it's on an express part of an elevator system. So people are I'm just panicked talking about it and thinking about it, quite honestly. All right, Kevin, are you back with us?
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Are you nervous for your elevator ride down, or are you just going to hunker down to the office for the next few hours?
I was thinking, Kevin, that maybe it's important that I call you before I get on the elevator, and then I call you when I land and make sure that it's like when you like when you take an airplane flight, and you're like, I'll call you when I land. Yeah.
Right, right. And check in throughout the ride.
Yes, I would.
The elevators here, it is kind of a wild ride every time you take the elevators in this building. it is.
I know. I'd actually say the rosary before I get on the elevator at all times. I ask for a priest to be on the elevator with me. Because there's like a whole thing. You're right. It's sometimes they stop and they're not 100% on the floor when they stop.
Right.
You know, the little.
It shakes a little bit. Yeah. Sometimes they're going at high speed.
Yeah.
You're not sure if you should brace for impact.
And then they slow up in a weird way. I don't know. I haven't quite figured it out. I think we're really doing a great job selling the building. It's a beautiful building other than that. They're opening their own
building.
We're getting our own bar, which they, you know.
I think they're building specifically for us, which
yes.
I thought was kind of them.
I think after an elevator ride on this building, you deserve to go to a bar immediately. All right. Thank you, Kevin.
I'm going to take the elevator up. Hopefully I see you again.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Godspeed. Kevin Powell, everybody. We've got Justin Kaufman. He's going to pick up the story on the other side.